Preston Spencer Churchill, Chartwell, Westerham, Kent, February the 10th, 1957. Book 10, Recovery and Reform. Chapter 1, The Victory Peace. After a generation of warfare, peace had come to Europe in the summer of 1815. It was to be a long peace, disturbed by civil commotions and local campaigns, but flaring into no major blaze until the era of German expansion succeeded the age of French predominance. In the revolutionary and Napoleonic struggles, Britain had played an heroic part. The task that had united and preoccupied her people was now at last accomplished. Henceforth, they could bend their energies to developing the great resources of industrial and commercial skill which had accumulated in the island during the past half century and been tested and sharpened by 22 years of war. But the busy world of trade and manufacture, and the needs and aspirations of the mass of men, women, and children who toiled in its service, were beyond the grasp of the country's leading statesmen on the morrow of Waterloo. The English political scene succumbed to stagnation. The Tories, as we may call them, though not all would have acknowledged the name, were firmly in power. They'd won the struggle against Napoleon with the support of a war cabinet drawn largely from their own party. They embodied the tradition of resistance to the principles of revolutionary France and the aggressive might of the Napoleonic Empire. Throughout the country, they had innumerable allies among men of substance and independent mind, who would have scorned to wear a party label, but nevertheless shared the prevailing Tory outlook. They regarded themselves as the defenders not only of the island, but of the almost bloodless aristocratic settlement achieved by the Revolution of 1688. Under the shock of the French terror, the English governing classes had closed their minds and their ranks to change. Prolonged exertions had worn out the nation. Convalescence lasted until 1830. The principal figures in the government were Lord Liverpool, Lord Castlereagh, and, after 1818, the Duke of Wellington. Castlereagh and Wellington towered above their colleagues. Much of the credit for the broad peace which Europe enjoyed after the fall of Napoleon was due to the robust common sense and shrewd judgment of Wellington, and to the aloof disinterestedness of Castlereagh. In spite of many setbacks and some military blunders, these men had led the country to victory. Liverpool was the son of Charles Jenkinson, organiser of government patronage under George III and close colleague of the younger Pitt. He was a man of conciliatory temper, a mild chief, and an easy colleague. He'd held a variety of public offices almost continuously since the start of the war with France. In 1812, he became Prime Minister, and for 15 years presided over the affairs of the realm with tact, patience, and laxity. Castlereagh has served his political apprenticeship as Chief Secretary for Ireland. In the difficult days of the negotiation for union with Ireland, when the powers of patronage were extensively used, he had seen 18th-century jobbery at its worst. He had joined the wartime cabinet as Secretary for War, but was obliged to resign after a celebrated quarrel with his colleague Canning, which led to a duel between them on Putney Heath. In 1812, Castlereagh had returned to the government and had been appointed to the Foreign Office. He was the architect of the coalition which gained the final victory and one of the principal authors of the Treaties of Peace. For home affairs he cared little, and he was unable to expound his far-sighted foreign policy with the eloquence that it deserved. Castlereagh was no orator. His cool, collected temperament was stiffened with disdain. He thought it beneath him to inform the public frankly of the government's plans and measures. Nevertheless, he was leader of the House of Commons. Seldom has that office been filled by a man with fewer natural qualifications for it. In Wellington, all men acknowledged the illustrious general who had met and beaten Napoleon. His conception of politics was simple. He wished to unite all parties and imbue them with the duty of preserving the existing order. The rest of the cabinet were Tories of the deepest dye, such as the Lord Chancellor, Eldon, Addington, now Viscount Sidmouth, once Prime Minister and now at the Home